Imposter syndrome never goes away. You know, the higher up we go, it just has a different voice. And every time we make a great leap, of course, we're going to hit imposter syndrome again. The only way to truly deal with it is to be amongst other women who are at a similar level. And as we start to recognize, she's a badass. She has imposter syndrome. Oh, wait, she thinks I'm a badass. Maybe my imposter syndrome is also BS. But it's one of the only tested methods that helps to deal with, mitigate, and even erase imposter syndrome.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, today we're having a real talk with a real leader who I just think the world of. In the short time that I've known her, she's phenomenal. Alexandra Jamieson is on the show today. Alex is the wife of Bob Gower, who has also been on the show. Together, they've written the book Radical Alignment, and she is doing consulting as a part of Change Force AI group, the SWAT team of consultants that I'm lucky to be a part of. And she is just killing it in coaching and has some really special elements to her coaching. So without me saying more about you, Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I really appreciate you making the time. And I look forward to hearing all about what you're doing, and especially for females who are in the executive ranks, who are in some special verticals that are tend to be male dominated, which you have really made your way. I should pause and note you were the co-creator of Academy Award winning Super Size Me. You also made it in the chefing world and in the tech space. So really bring a lot of your own experience to what it's like to be a woman in those type of dynamics.
Yeah, I will correct you on one front. We only got nominated for an Oscar. Oh. We didn't win, but we did get nominated.
Sorry.
That's all right. I did get to go to the Oscars and all the parties, and that was amazing. But yeah, I have tended to find myself in these very male-dominated fields of food and film and the arts and even tech consulting. And over the years, I have just found that more and more the clients who are attracted to working with me are also in very male-dominated fields. So it's a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're in your coaching, you do, if I understand correctly, you really focus in on the creativity side. So can you talk to us about that as kind of one of the ways that people work with you?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in a family of artists and have myself been an artist my entire life, simply because I grew up and it was always around all the time. My mom, my uncle, my grandfather, everyone around me, it was just how we lived. And the fields that I was attracted to, you know, I started out as a journalism major. I wanted to be a writer. And the more this whole world of coaching and consulting became, right, this became a viable field, a career path only in the last 20 or so years, has it been an option for us to do. And you have to be a creative thinker to be an entrepreneur, to be a business owner. So that's kind of where it all started. And about 7 years ago, there was, I think it was in the last 7 years, the World Economic Forum made this big splash with a study that said creative leadership skills are the most important thing that companies, corporations, employers are looking for, should be looking for in their hires and their promotions. And I dug into that a little bit. I was very attracted to that as a creative person myself. I said, what do they mean by this? And creative leadership skills to them, the World Economic Forum, meant, you know, people who can, you know, think differently, bring disparate ideas together in new ways, and come up with a lot of good and bad ideas on the fly because things are changing so fast. Things are more and more complex. So we need people who are comfortable with navigating this chaos and also have, I think this is a factor that wasn't highlighted in it, but the secret factor to all of this is having taste. You're not just creative, but you have taste. And what I mean by that is you see an idea and you're like, ah, that's interesting. That's a good idea. This is applicable. This will help a lot of people, or this will be attractive to a lot of people. So you're both creative in all the senses of that word, and you have taste. And I'm a visual artist and a painter myself. You know, I'm a writer, all these things. And I was finding that the women who were coming to me for coaching and consulting were really in the top of their field. You know, we're talking vice presidents, CEOs, president of Europe, top three salespeople in a global tech organization. All of them have this secret backstory of being an artist.
Oh,
a lot of dancers, a lot of people who grew up, you know, wanting to be a professional ballet dancer, or, you know, wanted to go to art school but got talked out of it by their parents. So ended up going to business school, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There may be some listeners right now who are like, oh my gosh, this is me.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I think not surprisingly, a lot of women in tech and in leadership already were very creative as young people, and that is part of what has helped them succeed. But yeah, they haven't nourished that part of themselves in a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. As you're talking about it, I was thinking kind of that, why would that be? But then as a person who has been very creative myself, and I do feel that I have to create to thrive, and creating could be the podcast or the writing that I do, any of the solutions that I provide. It's actually interesting because those of us who do come up in male-dominated environments, you actually have to be creative to figure out how to go forward and find ways to win and to think about things differently. And I love what you said about the taste element. And another thing that made me think is you also can see possibility. And that's a really possibility for yourself, even within this organization, that you don't see a lot of other people that maybe look and sound like you. So those are really interesting elements.
Yeah, possibility for yourself, but also for others.
Yes.
And if you're a leader, part of your leadership is going to be developing talent.
Mm-hmm.
And spotting opportunity in the folks coming up behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes as a mentor, as a leader, you're going to have to go to that younger person and say, look, I think you're the bee's knees, or you really got something. Let's develop this thing in you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a big part. And another way to say taste is discernment, right?
Right. Like,
but, you know, as a visual artist, I like the word taste, like it kind of gives a little hoity-toity attitude to it. And that's okay. That's fine. I'm in New York. We got to be hoity-toity.
No, I love that. I think it has an aspirational element to it. And I think that it just to be able to be creative and to be fun in what it fun and have fun in what you're doing is so important, especially in the high stakes environment that we find ourselves in. So, so you've given a really good description of kind of like the why and how, but like walk us through when you're actually coaching people. Am I right? You actually use art and creative expression to help. So I want to make sure the audience is getting a sense for, what is that like? Because it's very different than what I've heard other people say they do in coaching.
Well, like any good coach, I ask a lot of questions.
Yes. Right?
The first and should be the first tool in any coach's tool chest is 10,000 questions. And because we tend to be so cerebral we're really good thinkers and we can maybe get too in our heads about things. And we try to go into immediate spreadsheet mode or, you know, we're on our computers a lot. I take it out of that sphere as soon as possible. And this is actually why I love to do in-person work. People do retreats, go to people's companies, et cetera, and actually do hands-on art classes. Mm-hmm. So I'm not an art therapist, but I find art to be therapeutic in a lot of ways. And one of the reasons why I do this is because so many of us, again, if we haven't nourished that inner creative in ourselves in so long, it may be because of a long forgotten story from a teacher, even a well-meaning adult or an older sibling or the world or even just a mean inner voice that told us we weren't very creative or we weren't good artists, right? We talked ourselves out of pursuing being a creative or like myself, because I grew up amongst visual artists, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to be a writer. Because I can't draw. And I made that decision very, very early when I was like 7. I can't draw, so I'm going to be a writer. And I've written 5 books, and that's been wonderful. But it wasn't until I became an adult that I started to question that attitude. Oh, actually, I am a visual artist. There are parts of painting that don't require you to be an illustrator. It's about color and form and texture and shape, etc. So how can we figure out what that voice has been saying to us, the damage that has been causing to, like, how have we limited our own creativity, our own creative thinking?
Yeah.
By holding on to that old story, identify it, get rid of it, or at least start to get rid of it, dissolving it with paint, dissolving it. We do collage, we do watercolor, we do kind of living sculptural exercises. And I can't tell you how many clients I've worked with where I put them down in front of paper and they end up going back to ballet class. One of my clients was in her late 60s. For her 66th birthday, after our work together, she went back to private ballet lessons.
Uh-oh.
And danced at her own birthday party on point.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Another woman who's an entrepreneur, you know, built her own business, like is running her mini empire, taking care of her whole family. She now has her own studio and she has a painting business and she sells her artwork. I've just seen it over and over and over again that there is a part of us that just wants to be fed, that wants to be unleashed. And their regular work, their job, does well. It flourishes. There's a confidence and this kind of easefulness that comes when this long languishing part of ourselves gets time in spotlight, gets some attention. We heal that part of ourselves and we have all this energy and we have new ideas and we have excitement for things again. Yeah. So it nourishes every aspect of our life.
I love that you described that part, because if we have people in the audience who aren't necessarily thinking about that, they may have a passion for dance or art or something like that, that is an element that can come out and that you can nurture and maybe discover if you didn't have it. But also that last part that you said is it just helps you to think in different ways and gives you a different sense of confidence. And I'm glad you're talking about it, because there's an element of self-care in it. And I think a lot of times people think of self-care as a facial, or which, I mean, is not a bad thing. I've actually am proud of myself that I've gotten better about my own self-care and things like that this year. But it's such a way to tap into part of yourself. And again, that element of self-care, and you can grow yourself and evolve, which ends up showing up in your in the air quotes work that you're doing.
Listen, I'm a huge proponent of self-care, but I dislike the way self-care has been so commodified.
Yeah.
Something you have to buy.
Right.
It's something outside of yourself that you can get.
Exactly.
And art can be free. most of my art materials are recycled. Yeah. You know, they're upcycled garbage.
Right.
There's a lot of very successful artists doing that. But that doesn't, it's not about the spending of the money. It's about the taking care of oneself. But also, I'm going to get a little bit on my soapbox here, because it's not just about us.
Right.
Self-care is about being a well part of the larger culture. And the culture needs some care, too. I dislike the way that self-care puts so much attention on you and the way you're supposed to fix you.
Totally.
When actually the society needs a lot of fixing.
Yeah.
But we need to be strong and well so that we can contribute to that supporting everyone.
Yeah. Such a great take. I'm really glad that you added that. I'll call it almost like an exclamation on what you were saying is, no, it's really great. And I love the what you put to words. What I was kind of trying to get at was that element that it's not just about ourselves and it does so much more. It's like that nurturing within. So thank you so much for sharing that. And when you were describing some of what you've done and your artistic background, you did speak about your writing, and you said you've written 5 books, and the most recent one is Radical Alignment with your husband, Bob Bauer. So can you tell us about that? Because I think you're working it into your coaching and your consulting and some of the work that you're doing.
Yeah, so this book, Radical Alignment, is about a very simple conversation process. It's really how to talk about anything, especially really high stakes or highly emotional conversations where everyone's heard, seen, and respected. And you can really set up any conversation, the stuff that you have been dreading, or the conversations that have gone so badly in the past, or that you've just been avoiding, not wanting to talk about. A very simple, like, 4-step structure to engage with this topic around, so that you invite someone to it in a really graceful way and share about the topic together in a really collaborative way. And I always like to tell people that it's not about, this conversation isn't about fixing each other, or I tell people not to think like you're going to go into this and like figure it all out right in the first conversation, but you're going to make so much progress and you may come up with solutions that you didn't even know were possible. We have taught this in corporate settings, to entrepreneurs, in negotiation settings. We've used it in our family. We've used it in our marriage. It's really all purpose. Really, really helps. And you know, part of having a conversation structure that I find so helpful is that, you know, so many of the big topics, whether it's money or something relational, or, oh my gosh, you've been called into HR, you know, something like the emotions are high, and you may not always do your best thinking when you're in a highly emotionally triggered state. So having kind of a 4-step process will help keep you on track. It helps solidify and focus your thinking so that you have your best ideas. You give yourself a little bit of space and grace to come up with the next best topic. So yeah, we've really enjoyed teaching it.
Sounds amazing. I think as you were describing it to me, I'm thinking how many times either I've been in a situation myself or I hear other people, I don't even know where to start, they would say, you know, to go into a conversation or whether it's conflict or it's just a big thing, as you're saying, hey, this conversation we need to have, it's where do I even start? And then a lot of times people go into the conversation just thinking, what do I need to say? What am I trying to get out of my mouth? So I love the way you're describing it. I haven't actually seen it. And so I'm really glad you're sharing it, but it just gives me the thought that it has you, the person who, you know, needs to have the conversation, actually thinking about the person on the other side and probably some anticipation in the conversation.
Yeah, it can be very like regimented in a way. And,
uh-huh.
and I, I'm actually one of those people that doesn't love rules around a conversation.
Right.
I thought I didn't.
Okay.
It's a like it's very structured.
Mm-hmm.
There's four steps to it. And
yeah.
I encourage people when you're first using it to set a timer. Like each person will share for 3 minutes about your intentions for this conversation.
Yeah.
The other person will share for 3 minutes. Wow. And then you will set the timer again for 3 minutes and share your concerns.
Oh, wow.
And all of you. So you could do intentions, concerns, boundaries, and dreams.
Oh.
And you each share your intentions and your concerns and your boundaries and your dreams. And often just getting through that structure, less than 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So often the next steps just appear.
Oh, wow.
It just becomes so clear what needs to happen.
Oh, interesting.
Or you'll realize through the sharing of these things, oh, we're not talking about, we both thought we were coming here to talk about X. We're actually here to talk about Y.
Right.
And we've had people take this into the women that I'm most proud of who have used this have taken this into contract negotiations.
Oh, wow.
You know, going in for the promotion, mm-hmm. getting the promotion, getting a huge pay raise, getting a signing bonus, you know, getting mm-hmm. all this great stuff. And it's all because they had something in advance to help them get really clear about what they mm-hmm. wanted, what their concerns were, what they brought to the table, you know, but in a really kind of organic way that helped them bring their best selves to the conversation. It didn't feel so stultify, you know.
Right. It sounds amazing. And I know you focus mostly with women, and the book and the work that you do with Bob in this space is with men and women. Is that correct? Or just want to make sure we have a combination in our audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyone can use this.
Yeah.
Most of my coaching clients have been women.
Yeah.
But this has my 16-year-old son uses this.
I love that.
In talking with his friends about challenges and talking about what's he going to do after high school. You know, Bob uses this in talking about contracts with new clients. So it's really applicable. It doesn't matter what your gender expression is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of touched on, I'm going to call it because I know this is an area of your expertise, is conflict resolution.
Mm.
So because that can come up so often for people, that dynamic of conflict resolution, be it if you're leading your staff and there's a conflict within the staff or you're dealing with something yourself. So can you talk a bit about what you do in that space and how is it this method that you use and what's unique about the way you approach that?
Yeah, I would always start with this.
Yeah.
Always start with this. And one of the most important steps, especially when there's already an existing hot situation, is how you invite people to be in conversation. The last thing anyone wants to hear is, we need to talk.
Yeah.
Nothing good ever comes after those few words. And so we actually have all these scripts in the book that encourage you to, you know, hey, we need to talk about this topic. Here's some times. And before we get together, let's talk about our intentions about that. Like, what are your intentions? And that's what this means. Your concerns, your boundaries, your dreams. And that's what those things mean. So that you give the person ample time ahead of the meeting.
Okay.
To think about, okay, we're all going to be there. We're all going to talk about this thing. And we're all going to share our ideas on these four aspects of this issue. So it feels safe. Right. Priya Parker, in her amazing book, The Art of Gathering, talks about the difference between rules-based gatherings and etiquette. She's a big proponent of rules-based gatherings, and her book's amazing. I so encourage everyone to read it. Etiquette is kind of this mysterious, like, you should just know what the rules are, and it's a very classist kind of system. So radical alignment in this four-step pollen method, very egalitarian. Everybody knows what the rules are. And so then everybody feels like they're on an equal playing field. We've all got the same amount of time. We're all talking about the same things. We're not going to be interrupted. Like, it's very clean. And most of us are not used to being in situations where high-stakes conversations are cleanly run.
Right. Yeah. It must feel like such a, to be invited that way, to have that type of, I'll call it guidance and leadership coming into a conversation, must feel so, like, such a relief. And I can appreciate what you're saying, as people aren't necessarily used to that. So what a great tool to actually have remove, like, guards that get put up, you know, when that initial when that sign of prompt is had of, hey, let's talk about this. It's like, first thing, people freeze, defense, you know. It's funny, I started laughing when you said that at first, because I learned quite early on when I was leading some folks, where I would, a couple times I said, hey, can you stop in my office, and because I want to talk to you about something. My intention was just that, but there was no clarity. There was no communication in what I said about, like, what, you know, what I wanted to talk about or whatever. And immediately it was like, oh. And I had to realize that the perception I was creating, my intention and perception weren't matching. And so I had to, you know, I very quickly learned to, like, follow up if I messed up and, like, forgot and just wrote, hey, can you stop by? I was like, wait. I only meant this, but that clarity, the communication, again, especially as leaders, I think is so important. Right. Because sometimes we can get so caught up in whatever the to-dos are, the big picture, and kind of lose sight of, like, our position, that other people may think it's intimidating or that type of thing. So it sounds like it's a really nice pause for people in that organization.
Yeah, it can be. I'm so encouraged. I just got an email today from a vice president of a design firm she calls radical alignment her back pocket toolkit. She's like, I use it all the time. It's always my go-to.
But you also have workshops, and I know you have a workshop coming up in early November. So in case when this is released and you still have some open slots, can you talk about your workshop and because hopefully you'll be doing more that people can have access to.
Yeah, so I call the Creatrix retreats, and that's just a very old word for she who creates. And this is it's a 2.5-day leadership retreat. It is women only out in Tucson, but it's, you know, one of the only tested methods that helps women to deal with, mitigate, and even erase imposter syndrome, which still happens to leaders, right? Imposter syndrome never goes away. It just changes. It's very squirrely. So even, you know, the higher up we go, it just has a different voice. And every time we make a great leap, of course, we're going to hit imposter syndrome again, because we're doing something new, we're doing something different. So it's going to keep happening. The only way to truly deal with it is to be amongst other women who are at a similar, you know, level, for lack of a better word, and talk about our imposter syndrome. And as we start to recognize, oh my gosh, she's a badass. She has imposter syndrome? Oh wait, she thinks I'm a badass. Maybe my imposter syndrome is also BS. Okay. I mean, that's basically truncated down. That's kind of the process that happens again and again and again. So it's just getting together in these really, like, safe little circles, talking about the impact of it, the voice of it, and then laying with all of these creative tools. And then, of course, like, doing all the creative leadership strategies that work so well, the design thinking stuff, all of the other things that I shared with you earlier here. So these workshops we do so much in a couple of days, and they can be truly not just life affirming, seems like I'm blowing it out of proportion, but I do have clients who are like, this was a game changer weekend for me. And it's such a great thing to be able to give yourself that time to really decompress and strategize, especially as you're about to go into that next big phase.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something that can come like this unlocking really when we actually prioritize ourselves and give ourselves that time. Because I think so many times it's spent, and I know I'm using gender norms, but a lot of times women who are mothers and family caretakers and executives and all that, there's a lot of that pouring out. So I think there can be, and I've seen it with some of the clients that I work with, where they just by making themselves a priority and, you know, tapping into that and saying that they're actually helping themselves, it can be that unlocking where it's almost like we realize our own value, I think, in the process of doing that.
There's a really interesting energetic shift that can happen in these real deep dive intensives where you are asked to really grow creatively and also get very clear, like, what, you know, what am I actually thinking? What of that is BS and I need to scrub away?
Mm-hmm.
But also how do I need to expand? What do I need to step into next? I'm really a big fan.
Absolutely.
Of these.
I think one of the times you and I were talking, you shared with me that there was actually a study about what you were saying about imposter syndrome and the dynamic for women and these groups that is actually like the proven way to break through that. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? And I actually tried to Google it afterward, but I was like, I'm not looking for the right thing. So can you tell us about that? I found it fascinating.
Yeah, and I'm happy to share with anybody. I don't have the link at my fingertips, but the only studied method that has shown to have any efficacy whatsoever, it's not about it. No, working with a therapist as an individual, absolutely helpful and beneficial. Big fan of therapy. Love me a therapist. But the only way it has been studied in groups or cohorts is this very simple yet complex conversation about, you know, sharing and listening to other women and their journey of imposter syndrome. So that's the only studied method.
So interesting.
That shows.
Especially, I'm thinking about some women I talked to recently who have been in a dynamic where there was like a group of women and the like comparison came up right away of, well, she has kids and I don't, or those type of things. Does that come up in those type of settings? And how do you help to, so if anybody's listening and they're like, ooh, I've had some challenges in those type of settings before. How do you help to almost help to break down those walls or anything in those type of settings?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a well-studied aspect of positive psychology itself called compare and despair, right? We compare ourselves to others and we always come up lacking. And even if we compare ourselves to others, we're like, oh, I'm actually doing better than so-and-so in this mark. We often then end up feeling bad and judging ourselves because we judged somebody else. So you can't win. That's what I'm saying. But, and this is, I also have a certification in applied positive psychology that, again, knowing that this is a completely human, we all do it. We compare. We judge our own experience based on somebody else's to learn, like, hey, is somebody else doing it better? You know, could I learn something from them? Or am I doing it in a way that's, you know, not good enough or is hurting me in some way? So, you know, there's definitely benefits to comparing. And it's, I'm blanking on the other term that goes with this, but it's a really important conversation to have, that there are always going to be things that you find yourself lacking in. And there's always going to be things that you feel you can improve in, right? And I always come back to this idea that you are good. Like wherever you're at, you're good. And there's work to be done. You know, we're all humans growing and changing. The kind of people that are interested in working with me that come to my work, they're lifelong learners. Their brain lights up with new ideas and they're always interested in trying new things or finding a better way or iterating or whatever. Great. Let's use that. That's creativity right there. We want to absorb as many possible ways and methods and tools and ideas because every single new ingredient we put in this soup creates a more complex, rich taste. Or it gives us this huge buffet of ingredients to choose from so that we have more things that we can make. So, you know, that's the thing that I love about artists is what creative people and artists, we tend to be highly sensitive people. And we absorb so much. That's our sensitivity. We're absorbing a lot. Different levels, different experiences, colors, textures, words, whatever. And we're funneling it and then showing the rest of the world, this is what I see. So that those who maybe haven't clocked on yet or are not quite as sensitive are like, oh yeah, me too. So that we can like show them, hey,
that's so interesting. I thought of that question when you were talking about, you know, what you do in those group settings, in those retreats, because there's times when people have said to me, again, like I said, I went to this and I was comparing, or they didn't actually say I was comparing to all this, but in the moment where they were sharing all the comparisons, it was actually that moment where I was able to say, you know, get them to see to all of the things that they do have. And then it is this very quick, like, aha moment of like, oh yeah, right. What am I doing? So, you know, but again, like they can be very self-limiting to almost have a fear of groups like that, or, you know what I mean, a retreat group settings like that. So I think I wanted to ask you so that it can help people bring some guards down. And if it sounds interesting to people in the audience, there is ways that if someone is facilitating that type of a setting, it can actually be really inviting. It can, and be, I'm going to say, healing in a way, as well as, like, you know, help to catapult that evolution.
Yeah, you know, everyone's going to be good at some things.
It's such a great point.
And not good yet at others. But if you limit yourself from trying because you know, if you judge yourself, I shouldn't even try because I'm not an expert at it yet, then you'll never make any progress. And I really do hope to create that kind of setting with these retreats and with these group programs. You know, we're all here to learn something.
Yeah.
So
I love that. I love that element of the, what you just said, that let's play part, because it can be, again, leadership and those high stakes environments can feel lonely, so stressful, all of that. And an element of infusing joy into the days is just can be so important, finding like beauty, joy, gratitude in it can just be so freeing. And to your point, what you're saying is not just for yourself, but also the impact that you're having on those that you're leading is just profound.
Ben, you would be shocked at what gets unlocked for people. You know, one of my clients was a top salesperson at this massive technology company. And I had her make a flower mandala. And she was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, what do you want me to do? And I got her started at this beautiful little retreat house. And she made the most beautiful flower mandala. And she's like, something about that one experience unlocked this whole thing. She wanted to become a manager. She's like, I don't know why, creating Flower Mandala allowed me to like go be a people manager and a whole new level of my work.
Like my work just
dodged. Like, I know. That's why we do these things.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it does sometimes require suspending a little bit of disbelief and having a little bit of trust. You know, if there's a little tickle at the back of your brain, like, maybe I do need to pick up some art supplies under an experienced teacher's hand.
So maybe that could. So this has been great because we've given people so many different ways, I think, to tap into all the goodness that you're creating, that impact that you bring to the table. So your book, Radical Alignment, I know you're doing a webinar that's actually happening next week, so it'll happen before this releases, your retreat, and then the work that you're doing as a part of the changeforce.ai consulting team is a lot of bringing this to practice in organizations. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah,
I'm
that's great.
Doing
that's
the work.
Well, so I'm going to wrap this up because I don't have that much time left with you and really appreciate the time that you're spending here. Is there anything that you want to share with the audience in either some trends that you're seeing that we really haven't touched on, maybe if it's for women in those high stakes positions, or, you know, again, that need to that communication element? Is there any either trends that you're seeing or kind of what you're thinking are going to be some keys to be able to get us to where we all need to be, you know, kind of that forward movement?
Well, I have this link for you that you can share with people. Just takes them to the basic introductory steps of how to use the conversation that I shared from Radical Alignment. And, you know, the workbook just really lays out how people can think through what is that big, important, hairy topic that they need to make progress with. Mm. So rather than an outward trend, I see this as real inner work to be done. That it is so hard for us high-performing leaders to take a little time to ourselves and think through. But using this workbook and putting some thoughts down to get your thinking structured in a different way is perhaps the most creative leadership.
Right. Nice. It makes so much sense. And I think
you can make right now.
I guess my own cap on that kind of is that, you know, these solutions nobody's going to do it for us. Nobody else is going to do it for us. And I don't think it's something that you just like magically wake up one day and have these abilities or tools. I think that I just want to stress, I really do believe in that inner work and, you know, spending that time, whatever time it takes to go through it, because it's actually practice as we're going through it so that when you do get in those situations, it's more natural. So I really appreciate you coming here today and sharing so much with the audience, being so open. And I really hope that everybody who's listening have been able to take away some things and ways that you could potentially work with Alex and hear all the stuff that she's doing, but bring it into your own lives. So Alex, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Bye, everybody. Have an awesome day.
Thanks for having me, Shauna.